Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Welcome aboard Captain Fi, the Financial Independence Podcast. G'day. Welcome to an episode of Captain Fi, the Financial Independence Podcast, where I open the cockpit to some of the best and brightest in personal finance, as well as those who've reached or are on their way to financial independence. Before we get started today, remember anything on the show is provided for general information only and should not be taken as constituting professional advice. You should always do your own research when making any financial decision. So this morning, we've got Dan joining us from the West Coast. How you going, Dan?
Doing great. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. It's pretty hot over here. It's the middle of the day. I'm sheltering from the UV, and it's nice to be back inside on a comfy seat.
Oh, sensational.
Okay, so first up, I know we've spoken before quite a bit. I even had a chat to you on your podcast. For the benefit of everyone who's hearing about you and WeMoney expense tracking for the first time, could you just give us a little bit of a background on yourself and the WeMoney tool?
Absolutely, Captain Fi. And I think I won't go too far down memory lane, but for your audience, I spent the last 13 to 14 years in the finance and technology space, initial career within banking at both Bank West and NAB. You would say a sense of disillusionment after that short three-year journey, and then really started the path of entrepreneurship with our first company, which was switchmyloan.com.au, where we help people achieve better rates on their mortgages with a group buying product that we had. And then I did a lot of life stuff, grew up, got married, had a child, bought a home, spent a little bit of time in venture capital, helping a large family office out in Singapore deploy capital all around the world in new interesting technologies. And the last year of my life has been focusing on the solving the problem of money management and helping more people get ahead financially with WeMoney. WeMoney, in a nutshell, is a financial wellness platform that helps people get the most out of their financial lives. And we do that in three ways to begin with. Number one, tracking your spending. Number two, managing your credit health, so you have the same information the banks do around understanding your credit profile. And then thirdly is creating a community of really passionate people helping out one another on the topic of money, where you can get hints and tips from real individuals that are navigating the same money challenges and say money wins that we all come across. So that's my background in WeMoney in a nutshell.
That's awesome. And I sort of had quite a bit of a play around with WeMoney. Initially, I was just reviewing it on the blog because I saw quite a few people talking about it on social media. And I've quite enjoyed it. It's quite fun. You know, I'm always getting shamed by your budget telling me that I've overspent my budget. But it's a good nudge in the right direction. I looked into the social community side of things. And it's quite an interesting little community you're breeding there, Dan. It's I've heard it referred to as the Instagram for finance.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we think, look, not to go too deep too early on the show, we think there's the reason why WeMoney exists fundamentally is that we think that the conversation and the topic about money is often a hard, boring, and confusing topic. And for people to get really engaged about the topics of money management, you know, we couldn't go out there and sort of recreate what currently already exists, which is, you know, probably a slew of other expense tracking applications, the pain that people get from trying to do this manually via spreadsheets, and really injecting a lot of fun into that process of managing your budgets and making that really something that you want to engage with. And that's a challenge that we're trying to overcome. I don't think we've solved that just yet. The roadmap of WeMoney is very big and vast that infuses a lot of artificial intelligence and machine learning and the latest in behavioral science techniques to help nudge you into some of these better financial outcomes, which really goes into the deeper areas of behavioral psychology and behavioral economics. And we feel like our contribution in that space could really unlock a better financial future by getting to the point where you're really fighting yourself and your own brain and evolution when it comes to managing your money. And if we can help you illuminate some of those thought processes or biases into your relationship with money, that could lead to better longer-term financial outcomes. And to the point of community, we really think that the next generation of conversation about money, if we maybe even go back historically, and I want to point out these figures or what we call financial luminaries in the best possible light, because I think they've helped the generation before us really understand about money. If the listeners to your show might be old enough to remember a gentleman by the name of Paul Clitheroe, who was the head of or a financial commentator for Money Magazine, which was very, very popular in the 90s, he probably single-handedly opened up that conversation about money and finances to a whole lot of people, followed by somebody that we might know now, which was Koshy and his morning show program, talking about money and the topic of financial services to a large group of people. I think a name which will be familiar to us all, after Koshy, you would argue that the Barefoot Investor, Scott Pape, has taken that conversation. But what Scott Pape effectively did with his book, which is now, I believe, sold over 1.5 million copies, is spawn a generation of disciples that look just like you and I, that have the conversation about money with complete strangers online on platforms like Reddit, Instagram, where they're really spreading the word about their own financial situations to a group of people. And we think this is a really unique time in history where the topic of financial services is becoming more destigmatized by the day. And people, especially millennials and Gen Zs, are really craving authenticity in that conversation about money. They're not turning to our what you would call trusted experts in this space, be it, large financial institutions. They're looking for, people in IRL, like in real life, who are talking about this topic with other people and really getting their first-hand opinion about what it means to, save money on deals and discounts, select the right products, where do I invest my money, do I have the right superannuation balance? The topics are endless, but we think there's a real interesting long-term trend that we're leading into where we can bring that conversation about money in a really safe and trusted environment so other people can consume that information and get ahead financially. So that's really the essence of We Money and the problem that we're trying to solve here around this topic of money, which may be hard, boring, confusing for a lot of people.
The Barefoot was probably one of the big ones for me. I mean, I've always been okay with money, but that was something that really helped bring it into the spotlight. The thing that continually comes up when I ask pretty much experts in personal finance and people that have reached financial independence, I ask them, what's the most powerful thing you did towards FIRE? And most of them say, track your spending. It's just like this hidden secret, but it's staring us right in the face. So, Dan, why do you think tracking your spending is important?
Tracking your spending is really the kernel of good money management. We all work pretty hard. Some of us are working incredibly long hours. Some of us are probably working, two or three jobs, side hustling and earning that additional bit of income. And we often have expenses that we run into every single day, going to the petrol station. Do we buy ourselves a cup of coffee? Do we buy a snack bar? Do we have subscriptions that are coming out or things that we totally forgot to cancel that are still eating up our savings sort of day on day? There's a great saying called you cannot manage what you don't measure. And I think expense tracking is really the root of good financial management and getting to an understanding where you can really understand where your money is going, understanding the split of where your money is heading in terms of different categories is a way that a lot of people can really understand to get much more closer to how much they're spending. But more importantly, answering or that age-old question or nag that you probably have heard from your parents time in memoriam, which is you need to not spend as much as you earn, because if you do that, then that's obviously a path to ruin, a path to excessive debt, and really not a fulfilled life if you constantly get into a position where you're always, you know, hitting bank account zero from your next payday. So tracking your expenses is the first thing that anybody should do to really get a grasp of where their money is going.
Unless you're a state or a government, right? In which case you can consistently spend into deficit and then just print more money.
Correct. And then pass it over for future generations to pay that off. And we think that you should live your best life, or you should be empowered to live your best life as you can in this life, because you know you probably won't. There's no life two. I think if I remember these quotes, I think it was either a Confucian quote where they say that man has two lives, the one that he's living, and then when he realizes that he's only got one life. And I think it's until that point where you kind of realize that, you know, life is finite, and the decisions that you make today in terms of your spending can have massive long-term ramifications to your, you know, longer-term prosperity. So yeah, it's a great question, and it's one of the foundational bedrocks of good financial management.
Tracking my spending has really allowed me to take my journey to financial independence to the next level. It's certainly something I probably overdid initially. I was getting quite obsessive at one point, entering expenses into spreadsheets, tracking every bit of food that I purchased. It's interesting that you mentioned, you know, about the Confucius man living the life, and then when he realizes he only has one life, you then begin your second. I'm hoping that I'm on that second now. I'm starting to rein in some of those behaviors, basically trying to enjoy life more and have more time. And so increasingly, I'm starting to outsource and use really awesome tools. So when I first, when I first looked at expense tracking, there were a few subscription-based softwares that I looked into, which some of them were pretty good, some of them less good. And then since discovering WeMoney, which has been free, in fact, I'm pretty sure you guys gave me money to sign up, right? It was like $5 sign-up bonus. I've found the app really useful, mainly because it's giving me a little bit more time. How do you think people can use WeMoney the best to get the most value out of that app?
Great question. Look, it's the first thing that people see when they sign up to WeMoney is that you head to the dashboard page, you get a good sort of summarized view around all your income and all your expenses and your budget and all your accounts. And then when you head to the second tab, which is that track page, that's where you get a good breakdown of how much money you've got coming in, how much money you've got coming out, but more importantly, how that's changed over the months for a full year. And then you can deep dive into some of these categories that give you an understanding, well, how much am I spending on, say, groceries? How much am I spending on fuel and transport? How much am I spending on subscriptions? And you can get a good sense of, you know, where you're currently at in terms of your current financial picture. And the feedback that we get is that people are surprised and shocked on the first instance of where they say, oh my goodness, I had no idea that, you know, 15% of my overall income actually goes to paying subscriptions. And this would be things like your classic Netflixes, your Hulus, your Foxtels, your gym memberships, and maybe, you know, a gym membership that you haven't used for the last sort of 3 or 4 months, or they said it was canceled, but they're still direct debiting, you know, your account. And it's a good first pass audit to see, you know, have I really optimized my financial life in the way that benefits me right now? And where are some of the areas where I'm probably spending a lot too much money on, where I could probably cut back in order to, you know, save more money that allows me to achieve other things in life, like either paying down debt, you know, saving more money, or even investing into other areas where, you know, perhaps, you know, I didn't quite have the dollars to do so beforehand. And I think a lot of people in that initial surprise are just shocked about how much they could probably save initially. That can, you know, help them, you know, achieve, you know, better things in life. So I think, yeah, that's how we currently go about our expense tracking at the moment. But I want to underscore, Captain Fi, is that this is the first sort of iteration of where we see the future going. We see the future of Wii Money where at the moment, yeah, it's nice to sort of see that at a glance, but you know, some of the cool, exciting things that we've got planned for 2021 and beyond will be, you know, much more machine learning driven AI insights that give you a pinpoint analysis of where you might be able to spend money based on your own individual profile. And that's something we're very excited about, because that will get into the more of the deeper nuances about you, the individual, and then help you even save more money than you thought was possible. You know, a sneak peek into that would be things like, you know, giving you an understanding of what other people might be spending their money on, and then you comparing yourself and saying, well, if I'm, you know, age 25 and I'm in a certain occupation class or a certain affinity group of people, you know, why am I spending 150% more than people that look like me? And that could also give people a better understanding about, yeah, where they might be able to cut back on and spend less, and more importantly, you know, save more so they can achieve, you know, better things in life.
That's awesome. I was literally just going to suggest that. I was going to say it would be cool to see how my spending compares to other people, but it sounds like you're all over it.
Yes, that's something that's really important, because if you think about it, you know, you're walking down the street, you're seeing all these people, and you don't know, you know, whether or not, you know, they're in good financial health. But we don't even know some of our mates in terms of, until they often sort of get in trouble, whether or not they're in sort of good financial health or not financial health. And we think that added transparency just adds to a much better outcome when people get a good understanding about what other people are doing, so they don't have to feel alone and trapped in their own sort of four walls of their mind about their own situations. And that just gives them more empowerment to, you know, take control of their own, you know, financial destinies when they understand where they currently sit. And if they're really on the leading edge of that, then that's great. But if there's a chance to improve, and we can make it really easy for people to improve the situations, and that's something that's going to be, we think, you know, game changing in the way that, you know, people can manage their own financial lives.
That's pretty awesome. You're kind of sticking it to the keeping up with the Joneses issue right there.
Yes, and that's the sort of essence of where a lot of bad financial habits get picked up is in your early 20s. I don't want to pick on any people, but I want to pick on a report that came out a few weeks ago, which was the ASIC report in the buy now, pay later sector. And the report basically detailed that 1/5 of people that use buy now, pay later products end up getting into a financial difficulty. And I just don't want to talk about buy now, pay later because I think it affects other product categories. But the most interesting statistic that came out of that report was that almost 50%, so 49% of people aged between 18 and 29 were the people, or that 1/5 of folks that got themselves into that bad, bad spot. In your 20s, what are you doing, right? You're either, you know, going out getting an apprenticeship, you're going to uni, you know, you're going out having a good time socially, you're meeting a lot of cool, interesting people. Things like, you know, status might be important to you. You're getting heaps of external stimulus and influence. You just have to go through your feed right now on Instagram, where you're seeing countless pictures of, you know, happy faces and lives of people living awesome, you know, awesome lifestyles. But, you know, if you peek under the hood at a lot of those lifestyles, what you'll often see is that, yes, you might have a great vehicle. Yes, you might have the latest watch. Yes, you might have the perfect backdrop of the holiday. But what a lot of young people don't realize is that a lot of those, and not all the time, but more often than not, those are fueled by debt and people getting into, you know, really bad spots on spending money in their early 20s, where that can catch up to them in a really bad way in their 30s. And I think you of all people will know this, Captain Finance, is that your 20s is what sets you up for your 30s and your 40s and beyond. And if you can start really early and avoid some of those bad traps in your 20s, then you'll be the one that in your 30s, you know, having a, you know, a big life where you can, you know, afford to do things that you couldn't do if you spent your time and your money and resources just focusing on things that, you know, quite often don't really matter. I can say this from first-hand experience. I'm, you know, 33, heading on to 34. And I could just look back at my 20s and look back at some of the, you know, the photos I had where, you know, I spent too much time, you know, thinking about what type of shirt that I was going to wear in a certain outing or, you know, all that type of stuff. And when you look back in your 30s and you just reflect on life, you go, you know what? It didn't really matter. So I 100% agree with that point around keeping up with the Joneses. It's a big effect that a lot of young people have to navigate through. And you often hear the stories of people waking up in their 30s and saying, hey, it didn't really matter. So the more of that we can infuse into, you know, the conversation authentically, then, yeah, I think that should help people, you know, avoid some of these traps.
Dan, how does the We Money app work? How do you actually find out what you're spending on and link your accounts?
We use a third-party data provider, and that third-party data provider is called Yodlee, and they allow us to securely access your banking information and then give you the ability to provide all information in one location. So Yodlee is a large multinational company based in the States that powers large other institutions like Xero here in Australia that provide us that information so we can present that to you in one easy to manage location.
Now, look, this was a bit of a sticking point for me initially, and I know a lot of people are, not sure about it. It took me a while to even, link my account with WeMoney because I just wasn't sure. You know, I've been using it now since October, early in that, and it's been working fine. I've seen some interesting reports. For and against third-party services like Yodlee and Basic. And I've talked a little bit more about that in my review of WeMoney. What would be your response to, people with sort of security and privacy concerns regarding those services?
Great question. Look, I think as a deeper sort of explainer on how the process works. So when you come onto platforms like WeMoney or another similar platform like ours, you have to go through a process of identification of your accounts. Once you enter in your details, one really important thing to note, and this is what we try to stress a lot, is that WeMoney never holds your internet banking login and passwords. That's passed securely to, say, providers like Yodlee, who then provide us tokenized access to your information back onto the platform. What's also really important to note is that it's a read-only service. So Yodlee cannot make any changes to any of your banking information. It merely takes your data that already exists on your internet banking portal and then provides that in a summarized view that we can consume to provide you that aggregated view and understanding. Yodlee's been around for the last 20 odd years, and I believe in Australia operated for the last 10 or so years and trusted by a whole heap of other institutions that are quite large, which give us a degree of comfort that, you know, we partner with the right partner. But I think over time, Captain Fire, where we think the sort of future is going is that we're moving away from, tools that do what we call screen scraping, which sort of take your data from a screen and then present it back to you in an easy to understand format. Where a lot of the industry is moving to now is moving into the open banking space. And I really want to underscore for your listeners that it's not quite here yet, but it's something that WeMoney is certainly exploring, where you can overcome a lot of these issues where you don't have to get to the point of entering your credentials and logging into seeing all your accounts. That will take some time before that becomes active. And if the examples of the United Kingdom are anything to go by, what you see is screen scraping and open banking living side by side for quite a long period of time before people end up getting to that point of having what you call passwordless access in order to your information. So the world is changing. I would also encourage your listeners to go check out some of the conversation that's happened between the ASIC and the ACCC. Have opined on the topic of screen scraping before. I don't want to make reference to any of that information from the government regulator, but what you can see right now is that there's a clear view from the regulator that they're looking to support this industry in its process of transitioning to sort of open banking. So You know, we think it's the most highly secure process to currently offer a service like, you know, WeMoney and other people within our category. But over time, we're very excited about where the future is going to make that a lot more easier for people to access.
Okay. No, that does, that makes sense. And moving towards the open banking is a good step. Now, this sort of leads me into my next sort of pointed question here that I've got to ask, Dan. Now, the banks, they love having our purchasing information. And, you know, that's why we see a number of banks, you know, like ING, Upbank are the two that I'm using at the moment. But pretty much all banks offer this, is a savings account that's linked to a transaction account. And when you make at least five transactions, you know, whatever the criteria is, you'll get some bonus interest on your savings. And when I did some more reading into this, it turns out that they want you to make the transactions, not only because so you're actively using their products, but also so they get a glimpse into your spending history. When I, you know, when I said, when I did some more reading into this, it turns out that banks love your spending history and are actually able to sell it. Big investing firms want to know what's happening in the market, where consumers are putting their money, which products are going well. And that helps big investing firms figure out where to, you know, best move their money. We also know that with a lot of products, say in the social media space, when you are not paying for a product, you usually are the product, or more pertinently, your information is the product. So with those two things being said, well, what is WeMoney doing with your data? And secondly, what are your partners doing with our data?
Great question. I'll answer the topic of WeMoney first. So and maybe even just go to the philosophical level around how we think about data as well, because I think that's very important, is if we think about where the world has gone to in the last sort of 10 years, to your point, Captain Fire, there's been a lot of misuse and misappropriation of data, including mine, including yours. And we think that the literacy around data sovereignty and data custodianship, where you are the owner of your own data, and then you can use that in a way that actually benefits you and not some other third party, we think that conversation is exploding. Before we set out, you know, to create WeMoney, we often thought about, all right, where if we were to align ourselves into, you know, a brand that we really love and aspire to replicate in terms of some of their values, you know, who would those brands be? And if I give this example of the mobile phone era, is like you've got Android devices, which are free and open, and you've got Apple, which is a much more closed and robust ecosystem, which is a very permission-driven disclosure of data. And so from a WeMoney perspective, is that we will never do anything with your data unless we have your explicit consent to do so. We don't sell your data to third parties. To your point, we think there's something deeply disturbing around the way that people use data from individuals in order to promote business practices, which don't necessarily benefit the end user, but may benefit, you know, the company in a much more broader context. And, you know, some of those business models are involved in things like, you know, aggregating data to allow hedge funds to predict, you know, where they might be able to place bets in the market. And that's something that we don't think is right. So that's firstly and foremostly WeMoney's approach to data, is that number one, it's safe and secure. It's used in a way that only benefits you in a way that can help you achieve a better financial outcome in the future. We may drive insights on an aggregated level to you know, help our members and help our drive our product, but we would never sell anybody's individual data to a third party that helps that third party, you know, do something with that data that's, you know, not aligned to, you know, our core beliefs and also where consumer might think their data is going. I think on how the data is used by the third parties, I think from our understanding, you know, that data isn't sort of used in a way that that specifically, you know, says that, hey, Dan, we know what type of things that you're buying at Coles, so we're going to start pushing you more offers on Facebook. I don't think that happens here in Australia with with partners like Erdely or others. But I also want to be very careful that I don't want to misspeak on what the partners you know do with that sort of data. That would be something that we wouldn't be comfortable with. And to our understanding and knowledge, that doesn't happen here in Australia. And if it did, it's something that I think we would take a lot of concern to.
So, Dan, you mentioned earlier a couple of really exciting things in the pipeline with WeMoney. I'm kind of excited to learn more. Is there any more teasers, or can you let any other cats out of the bag?
Captain Fire, what I can say is that 2021 is going to shape up to be a really exciting year for WeMoney members. I'm not sure if you know I've shared this data with you before, but at present we're kind of growing at around sort of 30% per week. And what we're seeing right now is the conversation about money and financial health and the destigmatization of talking about money sort of quite openly is really resonating, particularly with a lot of younger people these days. And that's probably evidenced by 70% of our membership base being under 35 or less. And so we're clearly skewing towards a younger demographic. And some of the things that we see that are really broken within the Australian financial system, we're looking to probably address, you know, more completely in the product in the coming 12 months. You know, one of the more shocking indictments that we have seen more recently here in Australia is that people often refer this as this sort of lazy tax, where you may have a financial product like a personal loan or a car loan or a mortgage in the credit space, or be that a savings account, where you've had it for like 3 to 4 years, and you look at this product that you haven't, you know, laid an eye on for that period of time, and you realize that you are paying, let's just say for a mortgage, so the typical mortgage rate at the moment is around sort of, you know, 2, if you're doing under 2.5%, you're probably doing okay. But we've seen some shocking insights where people are paying, say, 3.5%, 4%, and we've even got a handful of people that we've seen so far that are paying up to 5% on their current mortgages. And what that tells us is that at a really like deep and fundamental level is that there is a lot of inefficiency within the financial ecosystem, where people don't really have the most optimized financial lives because the current products they're sort of taking with them and carrying around each and every single day, like, you know, credit cards and personal loans and home loans, are completely inefficient. And we estimate that probably around 70% of the total outstanding debt in Australia is what we call inefficient, where people aren't really paying the lowest rate they potentially could be given their own degree of credit risk. And one of the things we're really going to focus on in 2021 is how do we make that process and illuminate that journey for people, where if they are paying too much on, say, certain credit products, they can get a better outcome and do that in a very, very frictionless way than going through the very painful process which currently exists at the moment. And that's something that we're really going to focus on in the first couple of months here at WeMoney, is giving you a better understanding about where you currently sit in terms of your current financial life, and giving you an audit of that. But more importantly, letting you know how you might be able to optimize your finances in a much more better and sustainable way. And that will form part of, you know, a business model conversation, which is, you know, how do we make ourselves more sustainable? We think one of those initial approaches is actually partnering with, you know, the best of breed providers that can help, you know, Australians navigate their money and provide them the best possible products at the right stage of their journey. The second thing that we're really looking to expand on the product is really infusing some of those AI machine learning driven insights into, you know, optimizing your financial life, where you can literally set and forget your own financial journey and what we call this sort of new era of, you know, autonomous finance, where think about it, you're driving your car, you notice you got your Google Maps on, you notice there's a blockage, say, on the freeway, and what Google Maps is telling you to do is telling you a different route on where you can, you know, go to get your end destination. Wouldn't it be cool to do that with your money, where if you spend, say, if you spend a lot during, you know, the month of December, which is probably normal and natural for a lot of people, how can the system learn and understand where you might be able to save in other areas of your life and really optimize your money while you sleep? And that's something that, we're very excited about in 2021. I would say more practically speaking, without being as cryptic, is that we've had a lot of demand for what we call a desktop version of WeMoney, where you can see the mobile experience that you currently get right now, but you could also see that for what we call our power user segment, to give you, you know, the full breadth of a real estate on a desktop view to really get into the nitty-gritty of your money. And that's something that we find exciting, and something personally that I can't wait for as well myself. So there's some of the things that we've got coming down the pike.
Okay, wow. You heard it here first, guys. Come awesome stuff in the pipeline for WeMoney. AI hints, potential partnerships, and desktop variants. I'm pretty keen to see how that all pans out. Now, I do want to just pick up what you mentioned there, Dan, about making the platform sustainable. So at the moment, I haven't been charged anything from WeMoney, and actually you guys gave me a sign-up bonus. Now, obviously that money's going to run out. So how do you guys plan long-term to make this business sustainable? Do you ever see yourself charging a subscription or a premium type subscription service?
In the future, we'll firstly focus on whatever's going to give our membership the most amount of value, and then, you know, either charge an appropriate price for that service, or look for other ways that we can make our business more sustainable. And I think there's really sort of two sort of key avenues for that. One, which is what you've touched on there, which is the membership-based model. We think that's something that we will certainly explore, but we really want to highlight that the membership-based model will be for more advanced features that are really used by people who want to get much more deeper and granular information out of their money, advanced features that we're, you know, developing right now, which if I can give you another hint about what that would look like, would be things like, you know, solving the pain point of you collecting all your receipts and come tax time, that painful experience that you got with your tax agent around, you know, submitting all your details to get your tax file number together. And that obviously cost us a lot of money to develop, but we think there's something there which is really fair for people to pay in terms of a membership that would certainly help us become much more sustainable. And so that's an area we're going to focus on. But I really want to underscore that in order to live out our mission to help as many people as we can live their best financial lives, we do have to make things, you know, as open as possible for a lot of people to participate and have much more financial inclusion. So helping up those people who may be curious about understanding and learning more about their money and the finances without having, you know, to go through a paywall to get there. But we think those other additional advanced features is something that, you know, can solve a lot of pain points, can actually save you a lot more money. So, you know, the cost that we get in between that is actually, you know, immaterial in the long run. And the other part is, again, going back to that point of, you know, a completely inefficient financial system, is that, you know, we see, you know, there's some shocking stats. There is $1.9 billion spent on advertising for financial products and services. Captain Finance, I'm going to ask you a question. What do you think is the economic value add of that money that's spent in terms of, say, a conversion value? So all that money spent versus people actually consuming the products that are advertised for.
No, it's a waste, isn't it? And it's, to be honest, it annoys me. I hate seeing adverts.
Yeah, correct. And that's one of the biggest challenges that a lot of these product providers have, is that it costs so much to obtain customers from all these various sources, because it's very inefficient to say, hey, Captain Finance wants to get a better interest rate on his term deposit, but he has to go through a few gatekeepers. He has to either go through Google and pay, you know, or companies that pay the Google tax in order to get you know, your eyeballs to, you know, go to their product, which obviously adds to the bottom line cost. And so our mission is actually to go at a much more deeper level and partner with institutions and to align where you are at in your stage of life and the goals that you want to achieve, and then present you the right options at the right time, but doing that at a much more significantly lower cost to those financial services providers. And therefore, if we charge them less, then they charge you less. And ultimately, that actually drives the efficiency of the financial markets to a much more lower level. So not to be controversial or anything, but, you know, I'm going to pick on the big banks because it's a national sport. It's a great example. they do a lot of good things, but, you know, I want listeners to start thinking about things in terms of from an economics perspective. When you go down your main street in your CBD area or your main strip in your country town, if you go and have a look at where all the big banks and financial institutions are located, they're located in big fancy buildings, in big, you know, towers with nice addresses. When you walk into those branches, you know, you're paying for every single last bit of that building, the glass, the ATM machines, and things like that. And that cost ultimately is a cost worn by you, the consumer. And if you think about all those costs and if you summarize all those operating costs that a bank has to do and you boil down the core essence of what you receive at the end of the day as a consumer, you know, at the end of the day, if you're borrowing money, you're receiving money. If you're investing money, you're getting money back. And the real problem that we want to solve with our business model is to actually drive the cost lower where they're not spending as much money on advertising. People who have got lower operating costs can afford to provide the lowest rates in terms of, say, mortgages or personal loans. And those who have got the lowest cost structure in terms of depositing can offer the highest yield to consumers. And WeMoney is part of that ecosystem, is making that market way more efficient for those people to find each other. And if we can do that, then we can really significantly lower the cost for the whole financial system, where the cost is driven to its lowest possible point, where you, the consumer, are now reaping much more of those benefits than, say, you know, banks and financial institutions are. And that really is where the future is going right now. It's an unstoppable phenomena that is occurring, where low-cost providers are entering the market with better and more superior products, and that's giving consumers more choice, more flexibility, and better outcomes. And if we can herald in this era of where that happens in a much more frequent basis, then you know, more and more consumers are going to be much better off. And so our business model is going to touch on those marketplace dynamics where we find, you know, people better products, and then by finding the better products, they get those, you know, access to those deals and discounts a lot more easier and cheaper and faster and better. And you know, by creating that sort of platform, then we think that, you know, there's a little bit there for us, for WeMoney to become more sustainable, so we can offer that to more and more people.
This podcast is brought to you by the best portfolio tracking tool for Aussie investors. ShareSite makes it incredibly simple to track your portfolio with automatic updates of share purchases and dividends, easy-to-read graphs, and comprehensive tax and performance reporting, all wrapped up in an easy-to-use cloud-based system. For users with fewer than 10 holdings, it is completely free, and I even used the free version for years. Head over to captainfire.com/ShareSite-review to see if ShareSite is for you. Captain Fire listeners can score themselves 4 months of ShareSite premium for free by using the bonus sign-up code in the article. If you do ever decide to hold more than 10 stocks, be sure to use this code to get your first 4 months for free. Even if you do only plan to use the free version, using the code means if you ever do upgrade, you will still get your 4 months for free. Ditch the Excel spreadsheet and complete your tax with a click of a button by signing up today. That's captainfire.com/ShareSite-review for your 4 free months.
I can't help but think about, you know, sort of 20 years ago, in investing, conventional wisdom was, you know, to use these sort of old school listed investment companies and managed funds. And we've seen the likes of Vanguard, BetaShare, BlackRock,
absolutely,
sweep into the market with exchange traded funds operating, you know, at incredibly low management ratios. And that's sort of revolutionized investing. You know, I personally use a broker, you know, a mortgage broker for my investment property, and I will continue to do so. And that is a perfect example of how the lending landscape is able to be a little bit more efficient than the direct sort of marketing sense. So it's awesome to hear about, you know, the future of WeMoney And if you guys can save me money, I am more than happy to be paying for a premium subscription in the future. If people do want to read up a little bit more about WeMoney and where it's at the moment, I did do a bit of a deep dive a couple of months ago into where the platform is sitting. I'm going to try and keep my finger on the pulse and keep that updated. So Dan, bear with me, mate. And if you do have any great updates, please let me know so I can update the post. But yeah, it's definitely worth having a look at, I reckon. Read the post, see what you think, and then go and check it out for yourself. So Dan, it's been awesome chatting about expense tracking and WeMoney and some of the exciting places it's going to be hitting 2021 and beyond. I want to kind of shift gear a little bit and talk a little bit more about you and your personal journey with money, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned at the start of the episode when you introduced yourself, now you've got a pretty awesome pedigree when it comes to finance. You're clearly a very successful entrepreneur. You're highly skilled and motivated when it comes to money. How did you get on this pathway? You know, like how did you jump on the pathway to financial independence?
That's a really good question, and I think the older I get, the more I reflect on this. And I think it's true for everything, right? Everything that happens in your very early childhood formative years, you know, often is what shapes you in, you know, as a teenager, young adulthood, and then becoming an adult. And now sort of having kids of my own, you can reflect on that journey. And I think for me, Captain Finance, it really kind of started off, when I was, young up until the age of seven. My parents came from really, a hard yakka, blue collar working background. They struggled for absolutely everything that they, achieved in their own life. And that left a really deep impression on me at a very, very young age. I just remember going down to the shops with my mum, and it was a little shop called Action in Spearwood here in Perth, WA. And the first place my mum went to, she didn't go to the aisles and actually pick out, the bread from the bread loaf rack or anything like that. She went straight to the discount tray that had the 70% off stickers for everything to get a deal and a discount on, things that were still, useful to eat and whatever else. And I just remember that as we sort of grew up, my mum didn't do that because she was stingy. She did that because she didn't have a choice. And I think that sort of early sort of process and that, my early relationship with sort of money really formed that very, very early part of my life. And it sort of continued, throughout life, to be honest. One thing when you mentioned things like, becoming a successful sort of entrepreneur, I take that with, a pinch of truth, because I still think there's sort of a lot to be done in this space. And I would only consider myself really successful if we got to help out sort of more and more people in that journey of financial wellness. And that is, going back to that sort of story of, the anxiety that I saw my parents feel around money in their very sort of early years, took away a lot of brain power that they could have spent on other things. They could have, spent that on enjoying us, on our sporting activities, or spending more time with us, but that will focus more on, making ends meet. And I think that had a very, very formative impact on the way I view about money. But that's really, I would say, the point of interest. That, to be honest, only really became apparent to me even after I started a career in finance. That didn't hit me in the face until, I had my own child and sort of reflected on, some of those journeys that I saw in my childhood. But the more I think about it, that is really the sort of kernel of where my interest around the topic of financial services comes from.
It's pretty powerful stuff, Dan. Like, I must say I'm sort of hearing that story about your parents, it's kind of really hit a chord with me. My my mum raised a big family on her own, and similarly, she had a lot of struggles. You know, she just didn't have choices, and that, you know, that meant going to the discount rack, that meant powdered milk, you know, making her own bread, that kind of stuff. And you're 100% right, Dan. It's so important when people get the finance right, means the rest of the life can actually happen without all that stress and headache. It's awesome to hear, you know, about you being a dad now. That's kind of one of my motivations for reaching financial independence. So that's awesome to hear, mate.
Yeah, it's the best thing ever, honestly. When me and my wife had our first child, you often have that feeling, oh, it's not the right time, what impact is going to have on our money and whatnot. But honestly, it's the best thing that ever happened to me and my wife. Yeah, kids are expensive. Let's not dance around the point. But I think the joy and the value that you get on an intrinsic level is just, yeah, world beating, mate. So I really love your journey and your pursuit of starting your own family, mate. That's something that anybody that's either willing or inclined to do so, it's amazing. So good on you.
I'm going to be suggesting on the Wee Money feedback tab to have a child rearing expense tab added.
That's a good speaking feature, of which,
how do your wife and you manage your finances?
Yeah, so I think over the years, Captain Five, I've got, I would say probably in my early 20s, I reckon I had a lot of rough patches there with, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and doing all that type of stuff, you know, spending, you know, money on credit cards that, you know, became, you know, almost unmanageable and, you know, paying all that stuff off. But, you know, the way I conduct my financial life right now is that we have got, you know, fairly straightforward affairs. We know how much our mortgage expenses are. We know how much our monthly commitments are to all of our bills and our outgoings. So we track that pretty well. I mean, yes, I use the WeMoney app, but also we do that ourselves. We have our own, you know, date nights where we talk about money, where we got a lot of inspiration, of course, from Scott Pape when he discussed that in his book. And that's really strengthened our sort of conversation about, you know, money and financial services, where we can, you know, sort of talk about that openly and honestly. And that allows us to be a lot more sort of fluid when we make decisions around, you know, key financial outcomes. Number one, do we send our child to, you know, a private school? Do we send them to a public school? Well, where we are at the moment in our life, it's going to have to be a public school because that's what we can afford at this point. And that's where we are at the moment in our sort of financial journey.
Hey, I'm a public school boy, mate. I turn likewise. Out right.
Yeah, same here. I went to both, but yeah, I can safely say that my public school education was pretty good. So those type of conversations really happen quite regularly for us. I would say that we're talking about money at least 2 to 3 times a month, and I would say that conversation typically goes for about an hour and a half. My wife is in the medical services field and her situation sort of changes quite rapidly. And so we're often adjusting our own sort of lives based on new information. And I think the best way to do that is by having a conversation. I'm probably because I obsess over money, Captain Finance, I'm probably not a good case study here, but, I found our biggest unlock was to be really open to have that conversation about money. Because once that anxiety level about having that awkward conversation about money with your loved one is had, you develop a deeper level of trust and you develop a deeper level of understanding about how you tackle your finances together. And that only creates, I think, for a, you know, a better, longer lasting financial relationship you have with, you know, your spouse and your family. So if there was any recommendation that I've got around that space is talk often, talk frequently and talk openly about money with your loved one. And that can really help you get on top of things that, you know, maybe you're too shy about talking to your partner with. And especially for blokes, because blokes are often the, you know, the staunch ones that, you know, don't like to talk about their money and like to be the provider and all that type of stuff. But yeah, I think that having that conversation really helps you address your own financial lives in a much better way.
That's awesome. I think that's great advice. Mm. Keep it simple, open and honest, and talk regularly with your partner about it. So what about investing? What's your opinion on investing, and what are some of the ways that you you and your partner invest your money?
That is a great question. I think we're in our stage of life at the moment. You know, we've got a mortgage, so that's where our sole set of priorities on is actually becoming debt free ourselves, and that's really where our ultimate focus is at present. I would say investing is that. You know, the two types of investments that we have at the moment is our superannuation accounts. And then I also have a Raise account, which I do some micro investing, which keeps me involved in the investing game. I've also got a Spaceship account for my superannuation, where I allocate a portion of money each and every single week to that. And that's probably optimized for where I'm at the moment, Captain Fire. I'm not really big and exotic into, you know, ETFs and sort of daily share trading. You know, keeping WeMoney sort of going is my number one priority. So that if I had more time, I'd probably look to do some of that stuff. But right now, I'm sort of really optimizing my time and attention to my family and also WeMoney. So I'd like to keep things pretty lo-fi in that space. But one thing that has really captivated my interest over the last 4 to 5 years is crypto. And I am impartial to a topping up my crypto account every so often and keeping it super vanilla and just adding to Bitcoin. That's where I'm at in terms of my exotic strategies is really focusing on alternative asset classes, which, hey, if it goes off, you know, awesome. If it doesn't go off, I still have a fundamental belief in a world of decentralized finance. And, you know, I'm putting a lot of my discretionary dollars into crypto at the moment.
Interesting. It's funny you said ETFs, big sort of exotic techniques. It's dead simple, mate. I can honestly, I'll walk you through it if you should. If you want. We can do a step-by-step for you to buy your first parcel. That's cool, man. I've been using a micro investing platform called Stake for US share trading.
Just I've got that too.
And both Raise and Spaceship are on my really high on my to do list. I know of them. I've heard a lot about them. Heard a lot of positive things. But yeah, I need to actually get an account and see how it all works. I think those platforms, micro investing platforms, are bloody fantastic at getting people some skin in the game. And of course, once you've got some skin in the game and some money invested, oh boy, doesn't it change how interested you are in the markets?
Definitely, definitely. And when you see, you know, your portfolio going up or down, that creates a cue to for you to, you know, check what's going on, what are these platforms invested in. And it gets you, like I've seen conversations now, I'm not sure if you've seen this as well, Captain Fi, is that people that have had no idea about stocks or investing have got themselves interested via one of these micro-investing platforms. But now what they're doing is they're asking deeper questions. They're asking, well, what's the composition of the portfolio? How much are you weighted towards, say, tech stocks? And that spawned off a deeper interest into this conversation that would have happened before. Like if you rewind the clock 10 years ago and you say, hey, I'm going to teach you about stock investing and I'm going to walk you through stocks, you would have had people, you know, whipping out their sleeping bags and sort of going to sleep in the class. But these days, it's become a phenomena that I think a lot of people are getting super interested in. And yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think these micro investing apps are really spearheading a lot of this financial education that, you know, didn't occur, say, 10 or so years ago.
And, you know, solid strategy as well, paying down the family home. Obviously, that's a great strategy, getting your debt down to manageable levels. I mean, it's been, like, remarkable with sort of unprecedented times with interest rates as low as they are. It's a fantastic opportunity to sort of smash off as much of the loan as possible. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, interest rates could go back up. I mean, they could go negative. Who knows? Certainly, me and my philosophy with property, you know, if interest rates did suddenly go up, I might find myself in a bit of hot water with my investment properties. So, yeah, paying down the debt on the mortgage is always a really solid solid strategy. But Dan, I would encourage you to dip a toe into some exchange traded funds in a conventional brokerage account. I'll show you how to do it if you teach me.
I'd love to.
As long as you have to teach me how to do crypto, because I haven't done crypto before.
Oh, mate, yeah, that's a good one. I think if anybody's listening, I mean, obviously do all your research, but you know, there's plenty of platforms that are, you know, the razors or the spaceships of the crypto market. And I think the one that I've personally found probably the best is Coinbase. It's a US-based one, probably the most popular, but allows you to get into crypto at a very sort of affordable way. You don't have to do all these, you know, fancy things like having hardware keys and buying crypto and storing, you know, encryption codes everywhere. It's a pretty sort of straightforward way to sort of dip your toe in into the crypto market. Yeah, I think I've got a longer term belief that that is really the future of money, and that's where I want to be stacking my chips.
I've heard it been referred to as virtual gold before.
Yes, that's correct. There's probably another podcast topic on this sort of entirely, but you know, if you think about all the people that have been involved in the crypto space, you know, we're talking sort of MIT, Stanford, you know, PhDs and scientists, where people are devoting, you know, large portions of their life to help this sort of nascent sector become much more mainstream. If you've seen what the Chinese have done now with their own approach to digital currency. And so a lot of these conversations about crypto often happen, you know, they call them crazy, they call them a bubble, which arguably, you know, it might be the case, but you just can't help but see the competition, the intensity around the topic of crypto just taking off. More recently, PayPal, which we would call a very sort of normal, you know, financial services company, has now delved into allow you to buy cryptocurrencies. So it's becoming more mainstream by the day.
Definitely a topic for researching. Definitely a topic for some further research, and I'd love to track down an expert and have them explain it all to me in the future on the podcast. So you touched on earlier, Dan, superannuation. You mentioned you regularly invest through your Spaceship Super account. Talk me through a little bit about your attitude on super and whether you like it or not.
I like super. I love super. And the reason for that is pretty simple. Like, you know, God bless the Australian government that invented superannuation, because it created a huge asset class where Australia's prosperity is tied to this concept of forced savings. And when you've ever had any difficulty with saving money, there's nothing like the superannuation program to sort of touch on the, you know, areas of where you can squirrel away money so you can use that in later parts of your life. So, you know, from a fundamental level, I really like it, not only for myself, but just for the benefits it promotes for a lot of other people that end up going to retirement with, you know, more dollars. You know, I think superannuation is something, you know, at the age of 33, you probably wouldn't spend too much time thinking about. But when you think about, you know, 65, you know, it's really around the corner. Like, we're sort of 50% of the way there, if not just slightly over, of where that, you know, that potential conversation around sort of retirement might come about. And the way I think about it, Captain Fi, is the more I can contribute just ever so incrementally to that portfolio, the, you know, the more likely I'm going to, you know, probably live, you know, much more comfortable retirement, or fingers crossed and touch on wood that I do. But I think the reason why platforms, and again, there's plenty of different other platform providers, I'm just giving you one as an illustration, for example. The reason why I like Spaceship so much is because I really loved their focus on technology. And I've got a big fundamental thesis that everything that can become software will become software. Mark Andreessen, who's one of the world's most preeminent venture capitalists, who runs a company called Andreessen Horowitz, or the colloquial shortened term, or A16Z, had this quote, which was really simple but very powerful, called "Software is eating the world." And I really want to put my money behind the future of where backing companies and investing into companies that are going to create this future where we're going to become much more software driven. And a platform like Spaceship allows me to do that because that's where a majority of their allocation of their portfolio or their fund managers are allocating their money towards. So that's probably the simplest reason of why I've chosen that fund over anything else, and how I see my future sort of shaping out over the course of the next, you know, 10 to 20 years. And yeah, I really want exposure to that sector. So that's the reason why I chose that.
That's awesome. And you've really touched on one of the most powerful wealth creation strategies. And it's something that took me quite a while to learn, and I'm still perfecting it. And that is regular investing. If you can regularly set aside money and invest it, it's so powerful. And previously, I used to always think about, oh, I'm going to save up and invest when I have a large chunk of money. And, you know, I'm going to save a bit on brokerage. And I certainly found that the psychological benefits of regular investing trump, you know, any savings you're going to make for brokerage when we're talking about serious investment quantities. So that's awesome, mate. I also love super. You know me, I'm big into FIRE, trying to achieve financial independence. So my strategy has backed off the gas a little bit when it comes to super, but I still do have, you know, a pretty healthy super balance thanks to contributing from a very young age. You also sort of mentioned as we get older, we start to become more interested in super. And I think that's a natural progression. I guess the irony is even small amounts of money invested in super from a very young age will have such a powerful impact later on just due to that compound interest. So, yeah, it's definitely something to be on the radar as superannuation. Now, Dan, it's been awesome. We've been chatting for a while now, and I know we need to wrap up because you're a busy man. Now, I just want to finish off with asking, I guess, the two main questions, which I love to ask everybody who comes on the show. The first one comes down to education, and I know you're very passionate about education. It might be cruel to ask you what are your favorite three, so I'm gonna go open slather, and if you want to maybe just touch on some of the most powerful personal finance, investing, or self-development books, blogs, or podcasts that you've come across that have had the most impact on you, what would they be?
Great question, Captain Finance. I'll touch on two, which are the topic of money, and then I'll touch on one, which I think is not about money specifically, but I think gives you the foundations to think about your life more broadly, which actually includes and encompasses money. One of the big things that I think you'll probably get from having long conversations with me is that when we think about the topic of money and financial services, what we're often ignoring, and where everybody seems to be focused on the dollars and the cents and the mechanics of money, is not really getting down to the core root fundamentals of what we call the psychology of money. And that is actually the title of the book that I'd really recommend to people to read. And if they can over this, period of the latter part of 2020 or 2021, because it will really go down to the core fundamental relationship that we have with money from a deep psychological level. And that deep psychological level is where you will get the biggest unlocks to understand from a first principles level of people's relationship with money. So the title is The Psychology of Money, Timely Lessons on Wealth and Greed and Happiness. The author is Morgan Housel. And I think you can pick it up on all your usual spots like Amazon, but it's just an amazing book that I think has given me a better appreciation about some of the more deeper fundamental levels of managing money. The other book is called Dollars and Cents. And Dollars and Cents, and cents is spelt S-E-N-S-E, How We Misthink Money and How Do We Spend Smarter. It's written by Dan Ariely and Jeff Crazier. And this book, very similar to The Psychology of Money, but where I think Dan Ariely, who's a world-renowned behavioral psychologist and an economist, delves into this topic, is it goes into some of the more practical reasons why we make decisions about money that often are cognitive traps. I don't want to spoil the book in any great detail, but one perfect example is what we call the opportunity cost of money. And the opportunity cost of money is simply that you spend a dollar today to forego spending that dollar on something else in the future. And it makes you think about your money in a completely different way, where every single interaction you have with money has a longer term cumulative effect on your overall financial well-being. And that's an awesome book. It's a very short read. And the way that Dan actually goes through that book, and if you're lucky enough to pick up the audio edition, it actually makes you laugh and it's a really engaging read. So I highly recommend that. The third book, which I think, goes into the topic of money, but in a light level, but talks about your life more in general, is Principles by Ray Dalio. And the Principles book really delves into what are some of the principles that you have got in your life that you can refer to on how do you make decisions. They also talk about the decision-making process in a much more deeper and profound way that allows you to get a better understanding about if I'm listening to somebody and they may be a so-called expert, how believable is that particular individual or group of individuals around this particular topic, and allows you to make the best possible decisions by having a principles-driven life. And I think this can help out a lot of people in really understanding that real wisdom, you know, maybe gleaned from things that are more, you know, contemporaneous, things that are more sort of present and, you know, general knowledge, but really some of the tried and tested methods of garnering wisdom have, you know, been around for centuries. It goes back to, you know, Aristotle, where the principles that have been sort of driven have lasted since we've known human existence and human writing. And I think that book perfectly encapsulates how you can chart and write down your own principles and how you want to live your life.
Three new books for me. I've heard of Ray Dalio, and I think I might have thumbed through that book, but it's not firing off any neurons. And I did recognize, was it Dan Ariely or Dan Ariely?
Ariely.
Ariely. He had a great book, Predictably Irrational, as well.
Yeah.
So awesome. Thank you for those tips. They're going on the list. Awesome, Dan. Now, last question. What are your top tips for anyone on the path to financial independence?
I think, number one, we've discussed it at the top of the show, which is track your spending. This is literally the first elementary level that people can get a lot of understanding about where their money is going. So, you know, whether you use, you know, platforms like WeMoney, or there's countless others out there that can also, you know, solve this problem for you. Or even if it's simple of just extracting all your transactions from your bank and just understanding where all your money is going and what merchants it's going to, that would be the very first step. This is probably a very trite thing to say, but it's often the most sort of powerful, is that by educating yourself and really understanding that the pathway to financial independence comes from you amassing information that allows you to make better decisions is a principle that I have that I think I could impart with your listeners, to say that by virtue of you listening to this podcast and even getting to the end of this podcast at this level, it clearly means that you're very, very interested in making your own financial life better. So you're already on the right track. So keep that up. But for those who might be, this might be their very, very first Captain Finance podcast where they're listening for the very first time, then keep continuing this trend of empowering yourself with as much education as possible. The more knowledge you have, the better decisions that you make, and the more likely you are to chart, you know, the life and the future that you want. Number three, and my last point is, and I'm speaking to the people here that are in their either 20s or early 30s that are just awakening to this point right now. Nobody cares about your situation besides you. People are not going to remember the clothes that you wore at that 21st birthday party or how good you looked, right? It may made you feel good for a couple of hours during that time, but in the long arc of history, that can have really bigger impacts on your financial life. So don't think of anybody besides yourself, and don't get into a trap of spending money that you don't need to for, you know, reasons around sort of status or keeping up with the Joneses. Trust me, as somebody that's become a daggy dad, well into their 30s, that is not going to matter in the long run. So when you think about, should I buy a $100 t-shirt or should I invest $90 of that into, say, an ETF that Captain Finance is going to tell you how to set up, or putting that money towards paying down debt or savings, that's how you should think about every financial decision, is what is your opportunity cost of spending this dollar today and what impact that's going to have on your longer-term financial futures. And that's it.
Long-term, that's awesome. It reminds me of the famous quote, you know, we're borrowing money we don't have to buy things we don't want to impress people we don't know. I think I've pinched that from maybe Scott Reekin's Playing with Fire, or perhaps it's from someone more famous. But, it's a great saying. It encapsulates some of the issues. Dan, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast. Before we wrap up, I also just want to put a little plug there. You totally forgot to mention when I asked you about personal finance, investing in self-development, books, blogs, and podcasts. You missed the Money Bites podcast, mate. What are
you yes. Well, I didn't want to talk up our own sort of game here, but we were also pursuing the path of having the top conversation about money with my co-host Blaze, where weekly we kind of delve into the topics of money. We've actually changed the name, by the way, Captain Fire. It's now called We Talk Sense, a podcast by We Money. And we changed that because we probably didn't do our search to uncover that Money Bites belongs to somebody else here in Australia. So we profusely apologise to the owner of Money Bites, but we've worked together and we've now sort of changed our name to that. And we have topics about everything. We have guests. We've had you on the show. We've had other financial commentators on the show as well. And it's just our little part of helping people's navigation of the topic of money and financial services that little bit easier. And I really wanted to thank you, Captain Fire. I think had you said that 10 years ago, you would have seen an explosion of people talking about money and financial services on a podcast to complete strangers, and seeing the sort of community unfold, you would have just not believed that individual. But, thanks to the good work that you're doing and others, this sort of groundswell of community support is now helping other people access and understand money in a deeper level than didn't exist, say, 10 years ago, mate. So from me to you, thanks so much for the good fight that you're contributing to, and we look forward to supporting you in that journey.
Do you have a side hustle? My side hustle is websites, a form of digital real estate. If you want to learn more about this lucrative side hustle, check out my review of the eBusiness Institute and their online self-paced courses. They cover everything from total beginners right through to advanced web design and how to buy, renovate, and sell websites for profit. As a graduate of Matt and Liz's courses, I can't thank them enough for the valuable web skills they gave me, and now I enjoy growing my portfolio of websites for income. Captain Fire listeners can register for free access to some of these courses by signing up using the link at www.captainfire.com/ebusiness-institute-review. Build your portfolio of digital real estate and start using websites to make money today.
Oh, thanks, mate. And I definitely feel like I'm standing on the shoulders of giants here. Of course, you've mentioned a couple of the really amazing people in the field, like the Barefoot Investor, but also people internationally like Mr. Money Moustache, the Mad Scientist, J.L. Collins, and even closer to home, some of my favorite bloggers and podcasters like the Aussie Firebug, Pat the Shuffler, and Dave from Strong Money Australia. These guys have, they've been fighting the good fight for quite a long time, and I've learned a heap of awesome stuff from those guys. So, I appreciate you saying that, Dan, but yeah, definitely standing on the shoulders of giants here. Before we wrap up, now, we were having a really interesting chat before we started recording. Now, I have got some feedback on my podcast about going off topic. So I'm going to just say this. I want to keep talking about space stuff with you.
Yes.
And if anyone wants to keep listening to that, keep listening to the end of the podcast. So I'm going to wrap the official podcast up here, but I'm going to then, I want to keep talking to you about space stuff because you had some really cool stuff to say. So for the benefit of everyone that wants it to wrap up here, was there anything else you wanted to bring up today, Dan? And where can people find out more about Wee Money, get in touch with yourself?
I strongly suggest that for those people that can listen on, do listen on, because it will go to a deeper explanation around this. But the only thing that I thought I'd cover off is that, you know, our mission here at Wee Money is only supported by other people out there coming together and creating a sense of community where we're really working together as a collective to help transform a really stale industry where the perverse incentives are driving really bad outcomes. And your contribution to a platform like Wee Money can not only help you in your life and help you live in a state of financial freedom, but also can help other people throughout that journey as well. And the one thing that we're absolutely blessed by, which is a thank you to everybody, is that the overwhelming support of regular, everyday Australians that are jumping along to our community and making a contribution around this topic of money, because it's inspiring another group of generation of other Australians that are learning more information they didn't know before. So a massive thank you to everybody that has joined the Wee Money journey to date. And if you haven't already, and if you want to find and learn more, then simply head to weemoney.com.au and you can learn more information about how you can join as a member and get involved as well on our mission together. That was it, Captain Fire. I didn't really have anything too much else to discuss.
Awesome. Well, everyone who's still with us, I'll link in the show notes as well. So there'll be links to where you can get in touch with Dan, links to the We Talk Sense podcast, as well as their social media platforms. And I'd encourage you to just check it out and have a go. And, you know, if it's give it a go, if you get some value out of it, that's awesome. And, you know, if it's not for you, well, you haven't lost anything by giving it a shot. Awesome. All right. Well, so Dan, I want to pick up where we left off because we were having a great chat and then we sort of realized, oh shit, we probably actually should do the podcast recording.
Yes.
So I want to go back. We were talking about space and space programs and we got talking about ethical investing, and ethical investing is something that I don't really know a lot about and I want to learn more about. And the topic came up of going to space and spending $750,000 at Virgin Galactic.
You know, most people would think that, you know, spending, you know, $750,000 to go into space might be an indulgence, and it may be, you know, something that's only, you know, reserved for incredibly wealthy people. But, you know, for those people that are fortunate enough to be in that position, you know, what you're effectively doing is you're helping, you know, Virgin or other companies in the space develop a business model where they can then drive the cost lower to make access to space much more easy and cheaper for a lot of people. And if we want to go right out there and talk about the, you know, the benefits for humanity, well, it's us promoting what we call panspermia, or the ability for our species to propagate to other planets around, you know, our solar system and beyond. And I know it sounds like a pretty, you know, out there and you know, trite thing to talk about, but in reality, that's what we're doing. If you think about it, wasn't until the 1910s, so over 100 years ago, that the two Wright brothers got into a plane and, you know, flew that for, you know, a matter of, you know, minutes in the sky, to then heralding the era of global jet travel with the advent of the, you know, 707 jet, you know, and to see who that was reserved for, you know, wealthy business people and whatever else. But they then created a consumer class of jets and airliners that allowed people to travel around the world. And now we can all pick up, you know, a ticket and, you know, travel around the world with a low-cost carrier fairly cheaply. So our sort of contributions into the space era, you know, start with, you know, hopefully people like you, Captain Five, jumping on a plane or jumping on a rocket ship and helping herald that era of transport in a much more beneficial way for society. And yeah, that's something that I'm a really big supporter of. I think, you know, if you're going to spend your dollars on anything and invest in certain places, why not put your dollars to something that's actually going to make the world a better place? You know, I don't need to convince you of that. I think you just have to look at Tesla's share price to give you an indication of the immense love and profound agreement that people have on the mission that Tesla is on, which is to create an electrified class of vehicles that are helping reduce CO2 emissions to make our planet more sustainable and allow the way that we go from point A to point B much more efficient. And that's only going to explode now as more and more people, especially young people, become a lot more conscious about where their dollars go to and what companies and brands they support.
You talked a little bit about one of your, I'm going to say idol, I think the word you used was man crush.
Yes.
Who was involved in Virgin Galactic.
Yes.
And that was pretty cool, man. Do you want to share more about that?
Absolutely. So the gentleman's name is Chamath Palihapitiya. The name is a bit of a mouthful, but I trust you, Google will know who you're trying to find and present it. Chamath had a really interesting background, and I won't spoil it because I think his backstory is really cool. So I suggest that you look at all of his Stanford addresses to MBA students where he talks about his philosophy in life. But, you know, I think he got to a personal point, and a brief background about him is he started off in investment banking, realized that wasn't for him, then started off with working in startups, ended up at Facebook where he became the sort of head of growth. And then I think he became a billionaire by the age of, I think it was 34 or 35 or somewhere around there. He then developed a fund that invested into all sorts of companies. And then I think he had this sort of awakening that what he was doing was creating a degree of financialization returns for other investors. But what he wasn't doing is having, you know, real sort of meaningful conversations about advancing society forward. And that was really one of his core missions and mandates. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he fired his whole team and just left a few group of core people to work on the core mission of social capital. And that was really going to focus on transformative ways that social capital could help the next generation of entrepreneurs herald in a future around healthcare, education, transport, and clean energy. And I don't know why, but I just had such a profound resonance of that conversation that Chamath had. And I sort of caught up Chamath about sort of 3-4 years ago before it became incredibly popular. He had a famous CNBC interview where he basically said, "Who cares about the poor people?" And I'm going to paraphrase here, but he said something like, "So what? They can't buy another holiday house in the Hamptons." And I think that was said on a platform like CNBC, where a lot of investors probably did have holiday homes in the Hamptons, and it wasn't the everyday person that got to participate in that conversation. And I think there's something profoundly changing in the way that people think about how they progress through their lives and what their contribution is into investing and using the time and effort and resources to, you know, helping more people become more better off. And I think Chamath is the poster child of that conversation that I think is only accelerating now, with more and more people really resonating with that topic. Making money for money's sake, I think we can all say that, right? We're not going to become more fulfilled by adding each incremental dollar or earning, you know, a multiple of $100,000 on our incomes. There's going to be a natural sort of plateau of that. But then where does other happiness come from? Well, happiness comes from, you know, helping your fellow man and humanity at large, you know, inch closer to making our lives much more better off. And I think that's where a lot of young people see their career shaping up, is creating that impact in society where their contribution can be felt with a much more broader group of people. And so, yeah, for those who are really interested, just type in Chamath Palihapitiya. Give yourself some time, because I'll tell you what, my YouTube, when I first found out about Chamath, I think ended up probably being about 8 hours back to back of just going through videos and content that he's that's been put up on YouTube for the last sort of 3 to 4 years. It's pretty profound stuff. So yeah, I'd highly encourage it for those people who are thinking about, you know, where they may want to put their own dollars and cents to work. Is do they really want to put it into some, you know, boring and stale industry? Which, hey, I guess probably there isn't anything wrong with that, but there could be a bigger, more impactful way that you can use your dollars to actually promote, you know, better longer term outcomes for humanity. And yeah, that's something that really interests me.
Well, I think I know exactly what my afternoon's going to entail, and I'm probably going to jump straight onto YouTube and check out Jim App and have a look at that CNBC article. Look, I think it's an awesome topic, and I'm sort of delving in a little bit more into the learning about ethical investments. There is a particular ethical ETF that I'm really interested in. I won't say the name because I haven't really done any research into it yet. I've got a couple of mates that are, you know, fairly heavily invested in it, talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they reckon it's going quite well for them, very similar to a standard broad index ETF, but they just have some requirements, you know, I think there's no weapons, no tobacco, no alcohol, and there's some other sort of social parameters that those companies need to obtain to get in the index. I'm learning a bit more about it, and I'll share on the blog once I have that information. Hey, Dan, we should probably wrap it up because I know you're a busy man. It's awesome to chat a little bit more about space and investing. Had an absolute blast recording with you. And next time I'm back in your neck of the woods, I'll let you know, and maybe we can go and hit up Scarborough or something.
Oh, that would be amazing. Great to be on today's show, Captain Finance. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Captain Fi Financial Independence Podcast. To read the transcripts or check out the show notes, head over to www.captainfi.com for all the details. If you have a question for the captain, make sure to get in touch. You might even make it on the airwaves. You can reach me online through the Captain Fi contact form or get in touch through the socials. I'm active on Facebook and Instagram, as well as a number of online finance and investing forums. And finally, remember, the information presented on the show and the links provided are for general information purposes only. They should not be taken as constituting professional financial advice. You should always do your own research when making any financial decisions and make sure it's appropriate for your personal circumstances.